Lots more on the verdict to come. But as the verdict was being announced in Guantanamo Bay, the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. yesterday was unsealing documents in the 2001 anthrax case. The new documents in the investigation have been made public. Yesterday, DOJ said the case was still open. Today, it appears it may be closed. Scott Shane is a reporter for The New York Times. He joins us from Washington. Scott, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be with you.
The unsealing of these documents makes it clear why Bruce Ivins, who committed suicide last week, was a suspicious person and someone worthy of investigation. The DOJ says he was the only person responsible. How do they make that case?
Well, they make the case with a long list of evidence, but all of it is circumstantial. There's no smoking gun. There's no direct proof that he was the guy who mailed these letters that killed five people and set off a huge national panic about bioterrorism in 2001. Many people yesterday found the overall weight of the evidence they produced fairly compelling, but there were definitely holes in it, and his lawyers are still asserting his innocence. And they described what was released as, quote, heaps of innuendo. And indeed, a lot of it went to proving that he was a bizarre guy with some very unusual behavior.
Well, Scott, let's
but
listen.
Not all of that was related to the anthrax letters.
Let me get you to evaluate this statement from Jeffrey Taylor, U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, who at the news conference yesterday that you witnessed one way or another, talk about some of the behaviors of Ivins that were particularly suspicious.
In the days leading up to each of the mailings, the documents make clear that Dr. Ivins was working inordinate hours alone at night and on the weekend in the lab where the flask of spores and production equipment were stored.
Now, that sounds damning, but the idea of a biologist, a scientist, working inordinate hours alone at night is also kind of easy to understand, right?
Well, that's right, and in fact, colleagues said that Ivins was a night owl who sometimes worked in the lab at night, and in fact, a lot of the other scientists there say that when they have a project with a deadline or a project they're really interested in, they'll come in and work late at night. Perhaps more damning was that when they asked Ivins about why he was in the lab so much at night before the letters were mailed, his explanation was sort of a vague reference to domestic problems at home and wanting to escape from home to the lab, but nothing very specific about what he was working on.
Scott, if he was, as they say, solely responsible, and investigators believed that for the anthrax attacks, why was he not in custody? Why was he not arrested?
Well, that's a great question, one that several members of Congress were asking yesterday. Undoubtedly, there will be hearings on this. And the FBI is under pressure to release a lot more information than it released yesterday. But one reason was that they, by their own admission now, were sidetracked by the wrong man, Stephen Hatfill, another scientist who had worked at the same Army lab in Frederick, Maryland. And the investigators were so focused on him for 2 years, maybe 3 years, that they ignored what they now consider to be suspicious evidence regarding Dr. Ivins.
Although, Scott, there is a major hole in the case, and that is nothing in the documents unsealed yesterday links Ivins to the actual letters themselves, any of the enormous amount of evidence of stuff that was sent out, right?
That's right. Plus, in very, very careful examinations of his home and his cars, they couldn't find a single spore of anthrax,
really,
which his defense attorneys are also putting forward as evidence of his innocence.
Well, Scott, before we go, if this was a chapter 4 in a Robert Ludlum novel, I guess next week there would be another anthrax attack, right?
Oh, John.
There is a chilling quality here, don't you think?
There is. And one of the things that's frightening is that Stephen Hatfield was distraught in 2002 when he was being targeted by the FBI and came near suicide by the account of friends. If he had killed himself in 2002, would there have been a press conference announcing that they had their man at that time?
Well, Scott Shane, many questions answered, but still some chilling questions on the table in the anthrax case. Scott Shane, New York Times reporter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.